WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
While his lover was dying of AIDS, novelist and poet Paul Manette's greatest fear was that he too would get sick and the two of them would die apart in separate hospital rooms. But that didn't happen. But Roger Horowitz died on October 22, 1986. Paul Manette took care of Roger during his 19-month-long struggle with AIDS. Manette has recorded his feelings about their 12-year relationship and its premature end in his new book, Borrowed Time. Here's Paul Manette reading from the opening of Borrowed Time.
I don't know if I will live to finish this. Doubtless there's a streak of self-importance in such an assertion, but who's counting? Maybe it's just that I've watched too many sicken in a month and die by Christmas, so that a fatal sort of realism comforts me more than magic. All I know is this: the virus ticks in me, and it doesn't care a whit about our categories. When is full-blown? What's AIDS-related? What is just sick and tired? No one has solved the puzzle of its timing. I take my drug from Tijuana twice a day. The very friends who tell me how vigorous I look, how well I seem, are the first to assure me of the imminent medical breakthrough. What they don't seem to understand is I used up all my optimism keeping my friend alive. Now that he's gone, the cup of my own health is neither half full nor half empty, just half.
Paul, how did you start writing this memoir?
The night that Roger died, I turned to his doctor and said, what am I going to do without him? And he said to me, you have to write about him, Paul. And I'd been saying to Roger for weeks before that, I'm never going to write again, I'm never going to write again. But something about the doctor giving me that command made sense and struck flint.
You know, I was reading The Village Voice a few days ago, and the writer Armistead Maupin was quoted as saying, I'm reading Paul Monette's book, Borrowed Time, right now, and the single experience that you have when you read it is to say, yes, 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 three times on every page. That's the real function of gay literature right now. Do you agree with that, that that's the function of gay literature now, that yes, 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 that you'd experience reading?
I hope what Armistead is talking about has something to do with the pitch of rage and the pitch of love that are in the book. I wrote the book in a kind of fury and as nakedly as I could. What I would say to myself every morning, Terry, was, how can I be even more honest? How can I be? I just would beat myself up to be as honest as I could about everything that I'd felt. And I guess I certainly believe that gay people have got to stand witness to this calamity every day of their lives. So we somehow have to make a testament that will make our readers, that will make our people cry out that way, yes, you've got it right.
You know, reading your book, I get the sense that in the last more than a year that you spent together with Roger, that you were especially frustrated that you couldn't be legally married.
I'm not sure that the contract would have been so important to me, Terry, but I think my frustration was more irrational than that. It had to do with a kind of a sense of devastation that because we were assaulted by this disease, which was the cause of so much hatred and fear and meanness out there, that somehow the whole love that we'd had for each other for 12 years, the kind of triumph we'd felt in being so close and so twinned, would be lost, that we would just be one more cold-blooded statistic on the wrong page of the almanac.
Did that end up being a problem, or did you feel that commitment and love went recognized by the people who really mattered?
Good point, and there's no question but that we were surrounded by waves of love from our families and our friends, that they really stood in the fire with us during all of that terrible last year. I also feel that having written it down, having somehow recorded our love within the calamity, I haven't lost us. We haven't been lost. I don't want, every week or so, someone I know dies. And every week or 2 weeks, someone I know goes into the hospital and ends up with a diagnosis. And my friends and I are always saying we must not see them in the mass. We have to still see each person uniquely as himself. It's difficult because there's such a Holocaust going on around us.
In your book, you write that you went through a period of really not wanting to talk to people who didn't have AIDS, and I'd like to know why you went through that period and if you're still in that.
It's a good remark to pick up on because I know so many people who say it back to me. I feel in a way that there was a kind of madness about that feeling, but it was a feeling that I had in the summer of 85, about 6 months after Roger was diagnosed, and when three or four people very, very close to me had AIDS and were fighting so hard to get, you know, some kind of medication online, we knew that the Reagan administration was paying no attention, that the medical bureaucracy was mired in red tape. We knew nobody cared. And that sense of rage that came from nobody caring made me feel that all my valuable time was spent in talking to other people caught in the nightmare, that if we talked about it and confronted it one with another as much as we could, we would form a kind of AIDS underground and we would find the way out of the nightmare. I don't now feel quite so much that they're the only people that I can talk to. I feel actually I need myself these days to reach out and to try to make more people understand it. But I thoroughly understand how terrible it is to feel like you're living in the Warsaw Ghetto and a lot of the rest of the world looks like it's going to the opera in Berlin.
Now, you test seropositive now, which means you test positive for exposure to the HIV virus, but you don't have AIDS.
That's correct, and it's an important distinction to make, although even people who read my book with and like it a lot have gone to press saying that I do have AIDS. It's an important distinction to make because we have to understand how many seropositive people there are out there who are not showing symptoms. To meet me, I look fine, and I feel fine. I am trying to intervene with antiviral medication, and I am very activist about that, so I'm taking a bunch of antiviral drugs, and in the hopes that I can hold back full-blown symptoms. The glimmer, the light at the end of the tunnel here is that we hope to have a pharmaceutical online soon enough that can turn this disease from being a fatal illness into being a chronic illness.
Well, yet you wrote that you felt you'd used up all your optimism on Roger. I guess that's not completely true, that you still have optimism left.
I certainly have optimism for other people, and fighting for other people seems to mean a great deal to me. On a good day, I don't feel like I'm dying. On a bad day, that matter is kind of irrelevant. I expect I will die of AIDS one day. I hope it's going to be pretty far down the line, though. If we can get antiviral medication that works, it may well be 5 or 10 or 20 years before it affects me.
You know, I'll tell you one of the things that I thought when I was reading your book. You know, as Roger was dying, as you were going through just a terrible period, you had to make a living, and you were writing screenplays that are getting turned down, and TV scripts that are getting turned down, and you wrote a couple of novelizations. And during this period, you wrote the novelization of the film Predator. And I was thinking, now if I had read the novelization of the film Predator, would I have, as I was reading this, thought that the person who wrote this was going through what you were going through? It just made me think so much of the things we don't know about people when we read their books.
Curiously, if you were to read it now, it's not very good. But if you were to read it, if you were to read it right now, you would in fact see certain passages where the alien is in the jungle that are clearly quite AIDS-related. When I talk about the violence and the alien going after people and the kind of the rot of the jungle, there's no question where that metaphor is coming from. I'd rather people read Borrowed Time, though.
Okay, Paul. I wish you the best, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate it.
Paul Monette is the author of Borrowed Time, an AIDS memoir. His most recent collection of poetry, also published this year, is called Love Alone, 18 Elegies for Raj. This is Fresh Air.